This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back for another episode of Shooting It Straight with myself, Justin Jackson, and my man, John, the guy that makes everything happen. Before you start, I want to give a quick shout out to Johnny T-Shirt. Your UNC apparel needs is Johnny T-Shirt is the place to go. And also Congruity HR, where Tar Heel fans can get a free payroll and HR needs assessment for any small businesses. Go check them out. So thank you all for supporting Shooting Straight and Inside Carolina. John, man. It's always easier to come on here and talk about a win and talk about great performances and talk about, you know, accolades and things like that. But man, it came to an end, brother. North Carolina lost 89-87 to Alabama. First, I want to give a shout out to Alabama. I think Coach Davis said it a few times in the post-game press conference, but Alabama made some plays when they needed to make plays. They had some big I think there was moments in the game where a lot of times it's, you know, a make or miss league. And when you look at some of the runs that North Carolina had kind of throughout the game, especially in the first half, Alabama always seemed to get one or two makes to keep the game in reach at all times. You know, I think North Carolina was up 8 at halftime, if I'm not mistaken. But it probably should have been 12, 13, 14. But guys were making shots at times when they needed to make shots. And then you look down the stretch, they were doing the same thing in crunch time. And unfortunately, it's the way basketball works. Unfortunately, North Carolina couldn't quite make as many when it came down the stretch, and you know, that's just kind of how it works sometimes, man. That's the tough thing about basketball. Sometimes you're on the good end of, you know, oh, we shot lights out. Other times the ball just won't go into the basket for you. So man, I think there's a few things that we can kind of talk about. I mean, obviously, for one, you know, I want to give a shout out, you know, to this North Carolina team. Achieving a number one seed is not easy at all. They proved it all year that they were deserving of that number one seed. I don't really care what this game says. They proved that a team can get 6 transfers and come together and still be a really good team. They proved that, you know, it doesn't matter what the age is. You can still go out there and have a really good college basketball team. So, obviously, I think, you know, all the players for sure, all the coaches for sure, but I think we talked about it that they for sure had the talent and what they needed to make it to the championship game. But that's what makes March Madness March Madness. You know, it's every game is a toss up, you know, and it comes down to little things, and it comes down to shot making and getting stops when you need to get stops. And so, unfortunately, North Carolina just didn't necessarily do that, you know, when they really needed to down the stretch yesterday. So I think there's a few things, man. You know, for one, we have to hit on the, you know, RJ's struggles last night. 4 for 20, 0 for 9 from three. Like I said, it's basketball, man. You know, you obviously hate to see it in a game like this. You hate to see it in a game where if he makes 3 or 4 of those shots, you know, I think it's possible that they win the game. But at the same time, you can't do that. Ball bounces your way sometimes. Ball doesn't bounce your way. In the championship game, in 2017, I was 0 for 9 from three. We were able to make plays down the stretch, and guys around me were able to make plays outside of my shooting. You know, I wouldn't say that guys didn't make plays around him, but, you know, it's tough when somebody's struggling that bad. There has to be somebody to really, really step up. And, you know, I think it's just the timing was just a tough one. And, you know, obviously he's got nothing to hang his hat on. I've said this before. He's his jersey's up in the rafters, or is going to be up in the rafters for a reason. Averaging 21 all year in the ACC, ACC Player of the Year, first team All-American, in the running for Player of the Year. There's nothing for him to hang his head down. He accomplished some things and broke some records in North Carolina that not many people have been able to and ever will. So, you know, obviously I hope that he, you know, keeps his head up as much as possible and kind of keeps going. But John, what did you really see throughout the game that you think were some big keys for unfortunately coming up short for North Carolina?
Yeah, I think as you said, in March, the margins are so, so small. So you really just have to look at the last few minutes and break down in some ways, possession by possession, what happened, because the difference between UNC and Alabama last night was very, very small. And I think, you know, some people talked about the Armando Bacot missed dunk that came with 6:42 left. I'll pick it up actually a little bit later in the game. 3:46 to go. Grant Nelson made a three-point jumper to put Alabama up 5. And it was looking pretty tough in that moment for UNC because you knew that Alabama would be able to score the basketball they've been able to do so all game. But you have to give a ton of credit to UNC. They strung a huge 8-0 run to culminate with an 85-82 lead with 1:32 to go. As you said, RJ did not have a great shooting night, but he was big in that moment down the stretch. He scored 6 points down there in the key moments. He was getting to the free throw line, attacking, doing what he needed to do. But then I think the season kind of hung in the balance there and some late possessions, and UNC just didn't get it done. Jalen Withers missed that three-pointer. It was UNC 85, Alabama 84 at that moment. And then there was some empty possessions. I think one possession after that with RJ Davis trying to go attack the basket and getting blocked. And, you know, you can point to a million different things that could have happened to change this game. I mean, RJ Davis missed the front end of a one-on-one, I believe, at the end of the first half. He's an automatic free throw shooter. So him missing that, you know, I think it's just one of those things, like you said, you have to tip your cap to Alabama. In nights like these in March, when it's two great teams playing against each other, UNC really didn't lose this game. Alabama just made one or two more plays, and that was enough. That was the difference last night.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. It's It's funny. I was just watching Coach Davis's part of the post game press conference, and he said something. They asked him basically, where do you think that, I guess, kind of the momentum, or can't remember the exact question, but he basically made a comment of, I've been saying that it's the little things that make the big things happen. And, I think that was very evident in a game like this, where it comes down to having 22 offensive rebounds, right? I'll take, for example, having 22 offensive rebounds as a team and not being able to necessarily capitalize on that many offensive rebounds turns from a little thing when it comes to offensive rebounding to a really, really big thing. If you're able to, and I don't have the, I don't have points off offensive rebounds, but if you're able to score off of, let's say, 17 of those, if they're all twos, that's 34 points right there. You have that. You have decision making down the stretch. I think that, you mentioned the three that Jalen Withers shot when they were up one. It is a fine balance of, hey, we got to still play. We're only up one. We still got to play and try to score. But when you look at that, that possession, 15 seconds left on the shot clock, that's his only three that I've seen him shoot, I think, in almost the whole tournament. I think you can get a better one when it comes to that. And then, they come down and it turns from a three-point shot miss to a and one layup for Nelson on the other end. So that's a six-point turnaround right there. And I think when he finished that and one, I think is kind of when Alabama took hold of the game. And obviously down the stretch, it's, try to go score real quick, foul game, all that kind of stuff. But I think in that particular possession, not that that possession is the one that lost them the game or, that it all falls on Jalen Withers. But in that particular possession, I think getting the best possible shot, running the shot clock down a little bit more, and getting something a little bit better, I think is a small thing that turned into a big thing. It seems like it's just one jumper, but when you talk about a 6-point turnaround, that's a pretty big play. And then it's, you had mentioned RJ's block shots and, his off night. You have to give Alabama a lot of credit. Honestly, I've been waiting for a team to really key in on RJ the way that Alabama keyed in on him. I think he had some open looks that normally he makes, or some good shots for him that normally he makes. But when you watch the game, every pick and roll he comes off of, there's two bodies on him. And, they had length and athleticism on him and were really causing, for one, for him to speed up a little bit. Two, it was just kind of making him uncomfortable. And with a guy like RJ, that's the thing that the teams, I figured kind of all season teams would do, is just key in, try to get a little physical, put some length on him, make sure that there's two bodies around him almost at all times. And so you got to give Alabama and their game plan credit. I think that they were able to execute what they wanted to do very well, made things difficult. Now, at the same time, guys like Cormac, Harrison, they stepped up and hit some shots at some timely moments. But it's just tough whenever the head of the snake is, it's a difficult night. And when I watch that game, I think it is just little moments. You look at how fast the game was being played in the first half. 54 to 46 at the end of the first half of a college basketball game, that's straight offense, run and gun. There was a couple possessions where there was one possession where Mondo scored on one end, and I think it was two passes, and Alabama was laying the ball up at the other end. And so, those are the type of games that usually North Carolina has a lot of success with. But it turns from that to all of a sudden now the game finished 89-87, which means North Carolina only scored 31 points in the second half compared to 56. So obviously the game starts slowing down and you have to start making adjustments, kind of how they're playing in the half court and things like that. And, you know, I think it's just, it was just a tough one. Little ones, all the little things that we talk about just started adding up as time went on. And you can nitpick, you can say what if, or, you know, what it could have, should have, all that kind of stuff. You can say all of that. But when it comes down to making sure that you get the little things done in big games like this, you know, I think there's just a few things that ended up, you know, hurting North Carolina when it comes to that. So, you know, I think it's tough.
That was actually going to be one of my little things as well that turned into a big thing. You never, ever, ever see teams beat North Carolina back down the floor. That's what North Carolina is supposed to do to other teams. And the fact that Alabama was able to take the ball out from under the basket and get back down the floor faster than UNC and score some fast break points. They didn't have a ton of fast break points. They had 8. But again, in a game like this, every single point matters. And I think that's another little thing that turns into a big thing. I looked up the numbers on offensive rebounds. UNC had 22, like you said, and they had 20 second chance points. So they probably could have capitalized a little bit more there. And I wanted to circle back to the Withers shot as well, because I think that's sort of it's become a big moment for especially the fan base. A lot of people are saying, you know, he maybe shouldn't have taken that shot or things like that. Some anger perhaps at him. You know, I think John Henson tweeted this. If, you know, Withers hits that shot, he's a hero. He jumps up to, you know, Brady Manning status. So it becomes a make or miss league in some ways. I will say, when you look at Withers' skill set, that is not his strength on the court. I looked up the numbers. I'm not sure if this was before last night or includes last night. This season, he was 1 of 5 on left wing threes. So that's threes taken sort of in that general area that he was. Top of the key threes, he was 0 of 5 this season. And I looked up the numbers from last season too, just to see if this is, you know, maybe something that he's good at. Last season, top of the three keys playing for Louisville, he was 0 of 8. So I think that's one of those things as a basketball player, you know, we always, you know, you always get taught, you know, time and score, things like that. You have to know time and score. You have to know your role within the team, what your strengths are as a player. Like you said, 15 seconds left on the shot clock. You know, you can, you know, go right back and give another dribble handoff to RJ, let him come around. I think another thing that kind of gets lost because the game, you know, those last moments were so intense, but, you know, Cormac really didn't get the ball that much either as the game dwindled down. He made a 3-pointer to put UNC up 75-70 with 6:20 to go. And that was, I believe, his last shot of the night, definitely his last points of the night. So, you know, maybe there's an opportunity in there to get Cormac coming off a curl screen or something like that. And again, you have to credit Alabama too. They were playing lockdown defense. I think though, Justin, that also transitions into something I wanted to get your perspective on, because there's been a lot of conversation about second half minutes from Hubert Davis and who played and who didn't. I think the headline there, Paxton Wojcik played 9 minutes in the second half. He's gotten a lot of DNP second halves throughout the season. He didn't play in the ACC championship game against NC State. And Elliot Cadeau played 5 minutes. Seth Trimble played 4 minutes in the second half yesterday. What did you see with some of the lineups? It looks like Hubert Davis was trying to adjust to how Alabama was sagging off some of UNC's guys. But what did you think of some of those decisions in the second half?
You know, it's tough. I want to circle back to, you know, the Jalen Withers shot. You know, it's tough in basketball because, like you said, if he makes that and they go up 4, I mean, he just basically sealed the game for him. And, you know, you want players to play confidently. You want them not to second guess things. But at the same time, the players themselves have to kind of know and understand particular situations. You know, it could be the same thing if you said it about Luke when he hit the shot in 2017. If he didn't shoot that, or if he missed that, he's not the hero that he is today, right? But Luke had a resume showing that he was very capable of doing and making shots like that. Jalen, whether it's, you know, his minutes being up and down, or, you know, not having the same opportunity as others, or whatever it is, I was just looking at it on the season. He's 20% from three. And so when you see that, you know, it's tough to see him shoot that shot even more in that time, because it's one of those things where players also have to understand kind of what their role is and what they're really good at. And in those moments, you have to have everybody playing to their strengths so that they're able to come together as a team to be the best team that they can be. And like you said, it's, you know, if he would have gotten that ball and went into another DHO dribble handoff and come back off and popped, and it would have been 6-7 seconds on the shot clock and they kicked it back to him, then let it ride, right? Like that's, but at least you gave yourself a chance to get an even better shot as opposed to just settling with 15 seconds. And then you basically give Alabama, if I'm not mistaken, you kind of give them almost a 2-for-1 to where they're able to go down and score quickly, and then they'll get the ball back again because of, you know, not, you know, taking advantage of the shot clock and the clock, you know, being in your favor. So, you know, it's just kind of it's kind of tough because as a player, you confidently feel like, okay, I'm going to make this shot, right? Like as a player, that's how you feel. You're not thinking about like, oh, if I miss this, everybody's going to be pissed at me, or it could turn into something bad for us. You're just thinking, hey, I'm open, I'm confident, like I'll let it ride. But in that moment, you also have to be able to take a step back and say, okay, you know what's best for the team. And so it's that for the Jalen Withers shot. As far as substitutions, man, it's really tough because Pax hasn't played much all year, really. But at the same time, when he's come in during this tournament, he's done some good things. You know, he's he's knocked down a couple shots throughout the tournament. Defensively, I don't think he was, you know, an issue. And one thing you know about Pax is he's not going to do anything outside of himself, right? You know that he's not going to all of a sudden get the ball and try to go, you know, 1-on-3 or try to ISO or whatever. So it's almost it's a sense of comfort, you know, whenever you have him out there, because you know he's probably not going to do anything to like really win you a game, but he's not going to do anything to make you lose a game. The tough part about, and once again, it goes back to how Alabama's game plan was. The tough part about the substitutions is you start with Elliott, and if you look at how Alabama was guarding him, I think they might have had Grant Nelson on him, and he was literally in the paint when he'd be bringing up the ball. Now, Elliott stepped in and knocked some shots down, you know, that you definitely need to hopefully bring the defense and make them guard you a little tighter. But I think the tough thing is, and what Alabama probably was saying was, can Elliott make enough of those shots to really beat us? And so when you look at that, you know, it is tough because Elliott hasn't shown all year that he can step in and make 5 threes, or that he can, you know, really step in and knock down jump shots or pull up jumpers or take whatever they're giving you and be able to step in and knock them down. So then you have to think about, okay, well, let's go to Seth Trimble. Seth Trimble has always, all season, that's kind of been the, you know, if Elliott's not playing well or whatever, Seth is the one that comes in and steps up. And so Seth comes in and he knocks down some big time shots, but can Seth make enough throughout the game to make them guard him? Because they were guarding him, if not the same, a little bit closer than they were guarding Elliott. And so So then you kind of look at that, and it's, you know, when you look at somebody like Pax has proven that he can shoot the ball probably better than those two guys on a consistent basis. So I think maybe that's why there was a change in lineup kind of come second half, and why Pax probably played, you know, more than anybody on the bench. Because when it comes down to it, you have to have spacing. You have to have shooting. When you look at the way that they were guarding Elliott at times, there was no advantage at all. Elliott couldn't get the ball to the post because his man was basically guarding Mondo on the block. The issue with, you know, him driving the ball is he's just driving the ball right into a 6'10 or however tall Grant Nelson is, and all the length and athleticism that Alabama has. So I think it was just a tough situation because of the game plan that Alabama had. And I think we've talked about it kind of throughout the season is, you know, guys have to step up. But when it comes to this, there's really no way around getting around that game plan, especially if RJ's not, you know, hitting shots consistently throughout the game. So, you know, like I said, shout out to Alabama. The game plan, if I had the game plan against this North Carolina team, I probably would do the same exact thing. Always send two bodies at RJ when he's coming off the screens, have somebody with length on him. And then anytime Elliott and Seth got the ball, kind of use their man as like a help man. And, you know, I think that worked out for Alabama. And, you know, obviously North Carolina came up short because of it.
Yeah. And I think to just close out the segment on Elliott, you know, he spent a lot of time on the bench in the second half, as we just talked about. And I do wonder what impact that had on RJ Davis. Because if you look at the season-long stats, RJ has just flat out been better on the floor when Cadeau is on the floor with him. And, you know, whether it's a catch and shoot three that Elliott creates or just generally some of the shot creation. Adrian Atkinson wrote an article on March 8th. So I think it was through like 30 games. So it doesn't include all the, you know, data in the ACC tournament or NCAA tournament. But RJ Davis with Cadeau on the floor had a true shooting percentage of 64.1% and was scoring 26.6 points per 40 minutes. Without Cadeau on the floor, true shooting percentage of 50.8% and 22.2 points per 40. So I do wonder, you can't do these things again. So it's a what if. But, you know, RJ was struggling so much in the second half. I wonder if it would have been helpful to have Cadeau out there to get him some easier, cleaner looks. But then again, it might have been, they're sagging off of Elliott and he's taking those shots. It sets up a big offseason for Elliott Cadeau. I think he's going to work a lot at it, at his three-point shot. He's got it in him. You can just kind of see it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy at a certain point when you're a shooter who doesn't get guarded, or a poor shooter who doesn't get guarded, you sort of have to start to take some shots to feel like you're overplaying, you're overdoing it. I'm not this bad. Like, you shouldn't be giving me this wide open of a shot. So I think he'll settle into that 32 to 33% from three range. He'll spend a lot of time on it in the off season. I think that as the seasons go on in his time in Chapel Hill, defenses won't sag off quite as much because he'll improve as a shooter. But definitely, a tough way for his season to end. I know he wanted to be out there on the floor making an impact. And I think that, it maybe could have been differently in terms of RJ's. It could have ended differently with RJ's struggles if he had a creator next to him like a Cadeau. Because you know that Wojcik is going to give the spacing, he's going to make the right plays, but you also know that Wojcik, for all his strengths, provides zero shot creation on his own. He's not beating anybody off the dribble. So again, that's why Hubert Davis, makes a lot of money as the head coach. These are tough decisions to figure, which lever should I be pulling to try to win this game in the second half. And, you know, I don't think Hubert necessarily made any wrong decisions last night. It was just like we've talked about. It was a tough game, close margins, and that's March Madness.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's difficult decisions that you have to make down the stretch. And, you know, the tough thing about it is you look at it and you say, okay, well, Elliott, he was 2 for 5 from three, right? He was 3 for 9 overall. So you would say, okay, well, maybe he should have played a little bit more. You know, he proved that he could knock down some shots. But like I said before, I think when you look at a 40-minute game, and if you're Alabama's coach, you're saying, can he do this for a 40-minute, for 40 minutes? You know, it is funny you say kind of the self-fulfilling, you know, type of situation, because I think Elliott hit a couple shots and he was talking trash after each one. Mm-hmm. So I do respect the fact that he stepped into these shots. I mean, you could tell that the coaching staff probably told him, hey, these guys are probably going to guard you this way, so you're going to have to just step into some of these and just shoot them, because there really was no hesitation on some of the shots he shot, which I love. But I think it's just, can he do that for 40 minutes? And, you know, I think obviously RJ is an unbelievable individual player, right? We've seen him for, you know, this was 4 years of seeing him in North Carolina. But Elliott had a lot to do with, you know, whether it was Elliott or Harrison, the other playmakers had a lot to do with RJ's success from the standpoint of, we talked about it early on in the season. Now he just gets to go out there and do what he's best at. Just be aggressive and look to score the ball. He doesn't have to look to facilitate, get everybody involved. The ball is just coming to him in a scoring area, and he's able to go and try to get a bucket. And a lot of that goes back to Elliott, you know, kind of orchestrating things throughout the season. And then, you know, we, like I mentioned, we've seen Harrison kind of do the same thing throughout the year. So when you take that out and now you put, we'll say, Seth or Pax, two guys that really aren't, you know, their Pax is for sure more of a catch and shoot or play off of a closeout type of guy. Seth is kind of more of a slasher, but not really a slasher to get others involved. So you take that out, and now RJ has to be the main one that's handling the ball and, you know, trying to run plays and things like that. So then that makes it easier for Alabama to key in on him, because now he's just coming off of ball screens. We can double him, get the ball out of his hands, make somebody else make a play, as opposed to, you know, before it was Elliott coming off the ball screen and he was the one kicking it to RJ to be able to go make a play. So it is a tough dynamic. You know, we've talked about Elliott and how he's young and he's still, you know, figuring things out. I think this offseason is going to be big for him when it comes to working on his jumper, working on things and ways to, you know, kind of defeat the defenses that they've played against him a little bit, you know, make them respect and guard him a little bit harder. I mean, you look at the games where teams have really guarded him, and those are his best games because he's able to get downhill, able to make plays for others. But when teams started kind of sagging off, I think it started really with Michigan State. When teams start to really sag off, now what are different options that you can do? You know, especially this year when, you know, his jumper wasn't necessarily, maybe he wasn't as confident in his jumper or wasn't as consistent, you know, as he would want it to be. So I think this offseason is going to be huge. I mean, obviously it stinks to see, you know, guys like Mondo and RJ and Cormack, you know, kind of be done. Because this team, it was a fun team to watch at times. They were very animated, you know, had a lot of fun, it seemed like, with each other. And, you know, hopefully, you know, best of luck to all those guys that are going, leaving school and trying to hit the professional ranks. You know, I wish those guys nothing but the best.
Yeah, absolutely. One final point on Cadeau as well. He's an amazing passer. And when people are sagging off of him, that takes away some of his passing lanes as well. So it kind of handcuffs him in a couple of different ways. And you mentioned it too. It's the last game for Cormac Ryan, last game for Armando Bacot. RJ Davis has a decision to make. He has the COVID year, so he potentially could come back. He has not publicly made any comments there. Some decisions to make for some other players on this roster, including Jalen Withers, Harrison. Honestly, in the transfer portal era, you sort of just go down the roster and it kind of becomes an individual thing for every single player. That's just sort of the reality of college basketball in 2024. Every player sort of has to decide, am I going to enter the portal, stay, et cetera, et cetera. I'm curious, Justin, from your perspective as a former player, just take us through, it's heartbreak. It's a lot of emotion the night as the loss goes. But when does that heartbreak transition into let's try to come back next year. Let's try to do something big next year. Because I think back to that 2016 team, obviously tremendous amount of heartbreak there, but it led to a group of guys coming back together in 2017 and saying, let's do this right. Let's make our mark this season. So can you kind of take us through that process as a former player? What are these days after the season ends look like? Are you, texting, talking with teammates? Just kind of take us through this.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough the first, maybe almost week afterwards. I mean, unfortunately, I had to deal with a little bit more heartbreak than losing in, the Sweet 16. But at the same time, it's a lot of emotions. It's really difficult when you pour so much into a season and you lose no matter when it is. So for like the first, I'd probably say the first week, it's really tough and difficult. I don't know if there's ever, at least for me, there was never a time where it was like I went isolation mode and never talked to my teammates. If anything, we kind of started doing more things together because we didn't have practice and things like that. So we'd go eat out together a little bit more. We'd hang out together a little bit more. I think, you have to look at kind of this next month. And, for me in particular, and there was a few guys on my team too that did the same thing, but kind of the whole put your name into the draft, kind of get some feedback, figure out what it is that, the pro level is looking for from you, and make that decision. I don't really see anybody on this team necessarily that can come back that would really decide to leave. That's just my personal opinion. But at the same time, you have to get all the information you need to make the right decision for you as a player. And, for instance, like Harrison, I've seen kind of his name pop up on, whether it's some draft boards or, people have kind of talked about him a little bit. So for him, it's a matter of entering his name, whether it's going and doing maybe a couple workouts. I don't fully remember that process. I know I went and did a couple workouts and then came back and, I was still able to pull my name out of the draft and things like that. So I think that's kind of what you'll see over the next month or so. It's just kind of guys, for one, kind of just, taking a step back from the season. And now kind of going into seeing what it is for the next level. And then once guys make the decision to either come back or leave, then it's, okay, if guys are coming back, then let's really lock it in. For us going into 2017, you would have like this month break basically of like no lifting, no workouts, no pickup, all that kind of stuff. If you really didn't want to, and then it would turn into basically optional lifts, optional type of things. And then it would turn into mandatory, the 7 a.m. lifts all summer. And then going into conditioning, that kind of stuff. For us going into 2017, we probably had, after that few weeks or month that we took off, we probably had 4 or 5 guys in there already lifting, kind of throughout the optional time. And that kind of thing. So there was just a different level of almost dedication, I would say, from guys going into the summer, because we knew that we had, obviously, other than Marcus and Bryce, which were huge, and Big Joe, they were huge losses, but we knew we still had enough to win a lot of games. And so everybody really just locked in and got right back into it and really dedicated themselves to getting better individually so that we would be better as a team. And I think that's kind of what you'll see with this team. Obviously, like you said, with the transfer portal, man, it's, I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple new faces going into next year. You know, and at the same time, we've got some pretty decent freshmen coming in as well going into next year. So, you know, I think it's you'll kind of see a lot going on, but at the same time, I think it's just guys getting information, guys trying to figure out what their next steps are. And, you know, once guys figure out, okay, we're going to come back or we're leaving or whatever, then I think you'll see a little bit, you'll see a little bit more dedication, I think. Obviously we won't see it because it'll be day to day for them and, you know, behind the scenes type of stuff, but I'm sure you'll see that. Cause once you kind of get the taste of, okay, we had a little bit of success, number one seed, you know, won a few games in the tournament. Once you kind of feel that success, you always want that. So, I'm sure that's kind of what you'll see. That's kind of what we had, going in 2017. So I'm sure you'll kind of see very similar.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Stay tuned to Inside Carolina. People like Sherelle McMillan, they'll have all the details about who's coming where and who's doing what. So that'll be fun to watch as the offseason goes along. I'm not ready yet to talk about next season, though. It's still too soon for me. I'm still thinking about last night. North Carolina finishes this season with a 29-8 record in the ACC. They went 17-3, which is a remarkable number. There's been a lot of talk about, oh, you know, the ACC is down, things like that. But you can see in March Madness, the ACC has some really good teams. Clemson is playing great. So to go 17-3 in conference is a tremendous accomplishment. They made the ACC tournament finals. They got a number one seed and they made the Sweet 16. So Justin, when you look on the whole, any final thoughts about the season, just final takeaways here as we close out this episode after UNC's 89-87 loss to Alabama?
You know, it's unfortunate. I think overall it stinks to see this team lose kind of in the manner that they lost. And kind of the hopes and goals that I think they had set and I think a lot of people had set for them. At the same time, we have to take a step back and say, okay, hold on, this team earned a number one seed in the tournament. They went 17-3 in the ACC. I mean, like you say, it doesn't matter if the ACC is down or not, that's a very impressive accomplishment. You know, these guys were able to come together within one season of knowing each other, really, of, you know, playing with each other and, you know, kind of getting to know each other. They were able to come together and still accomplish those things and still win two games in the tournament and, you know, give themselves a chance to make a run, you know, to win the whole thing. And like I said, it's tough because right now it's kind of the sting of the loss and that's kind of all you can really think about. But I think when you take a step back and you look at this team, I think they accomplished some real things. And obviously individuals, RJ played unbelievable all year. Mondo, especially down the stretch, Mondo played extremely well. Harrison played well and was consistent throughout the year. Cormac, as much as we give Cormac some, you know, some hard times, Cormac, I mean, down the stretch, shot lights out. You know, he hit some huge shots kind of game in and game out and, you know, gave this team a chance a lot of times throughout the games to win. So, you know, you kind of have to look at the individuals and, you know, obviously you've got a guy like Elliott who's, you know, no matter how many years he's in college, he's going to get better and better. And, you know, you've got some younger guys coming in, you'll have some transfers and things like that. But this particular team, they were fun to watch. They seemed like they enjoyed playing with each other. And they were good. you know, even, you know, basically top four team in the country going into the tournament. I mean, that's a very, very difficult accomplishment. And they did it. So, like I said, it stings right now. And it's going to sting because obviously you can sit there and say, what if, and, you know, we should have done this or whatever, but they accomplished a lot. And, you know, I think sometimes you just have to show the appreciation for what they did accomplish as opposed to what they didn't do. And so shout out to this team. Obviously, I know it's a difficult time. I've been there. I've kind of been in this, you know, I'm sure it's kind of a darker place to be in right now as you get back to campus, knowing that there's no more basketball and everything's done. But they should keep their heads up. Like I said, they did some really great things for, you know, this program, for the school, for themselves. So there's really nothing to hang their head down on. So, you know, I enjoyed all season watching them. It was, you know, there was definitely some things that kind of throughout the season was, you know, hold on, like what's really going on. But for the most part, they were a fun team to watch and, you know, they did some good things. So hopefully they're able to, you know, take it in stride and kind of keep going.
Absolutely. Yes. And we appreciate everyone listening to the Shooting It Straight podcast throughout the season. We had great support, great questions from people who asked us questions and things like that. So we appreciate everyone watching. Shout out as well to everyone at Inside Carolina on Justin's team who helped us make the podcast throughout the season as well. And yeah, Justin, you want to close this out?
I guess this is kind of the last Shooting Straight, at least for a while, huh? Man, it's been a lot of fun. John, I appreciate you, bro. You make everything happen behind the scenes, getting the videos ready and editing and all that good stuff. So I appreciate you, man. You've been awesome. To everybody listening and watching, obviously this was the first year of Shooting It Straight. And it was just to kind of see, how people would listen, how people would check in, kind of see how, for me, how I enjoyed it. And I loved every bit of it. Thank you to everybody that's watched and, you know, supported and listened and sent in questions whenever we've needed questions and things like that. It's been a lot of fun. And y'all as fans have kind of made it even more fun. So I appreciate y'all and everything that y'all have done as far as supporting this, you know, Shooting It Straight podcast. And, you know, hopefully there's more to come. So we'll see. But once again, thank you to everybody for listening and tuning in throughout the season. It was a lot of fun and, you know, hopefully we'll do it sometime soon.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.